Welcome to the Super Gamer Podcast. Welcome to the new Super Gamer Podcast, episode 186 and the first episode of 2024. Our guest this week is a multi-instrumentalist and music technologist, vocalist, recording artist, composer, arranger, audio engineer, music teacher, YouTuber. We have Julia Henderson. Thank you for being here.
Hello. Happy 2024, everyone.
Yeah. We'll start with, because it is the beginning of 2024 and it's coming right up, are you heading to MAGFest this year?
I am. Yes. I was there last year after, I think, a six-year-long hiatus. And I'll be there again this year.
Any acts that you are particularly excited to see or anything you want to do?
Yeah, so I just heard about Tournament Arc performing, so I'm excited to see them. I haven't seen them live at all before, so I think that'll be awesome. That's Mason Lieberman's band. And actually, I just heard that the opening ceremonies is going to have a trombone choir with a bunch of trombonists who I know, headed by Allison Martin and I think someone else who I actually don't know.
Allison Martin, friend of the show.
Yeah. Oh, I'm looking forward to kicking off with that because I think that'll be amazing.
Yeah, awesome. I've never been to a MAGFest. I'd love to go. It is considerably farther from me. I'm in Winnipeg. You're in Toronto.
Yeah.
And yes, so, but speaking of that, I did go to VGMCon last year, which would have been my first and only ever, like, video game music convention that I've been to, and I could have seen you, but you got COVID.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yes, we had everything planned, like, paid for the flights and everything. That was, I think, the first time ever in my life I had to cancel a flight and, like, had to cancel a trip. So... You know what? Like, not the end of the world. It's a sunk cost anyway. Like, I already paid for it. It is a bummer to not be able to actually go. Luckily, they were really accommodating. Let us, you know, bump over the tickets for the next year. So if we can make it over this year, then we will. Fingers crossed for that.
Yeah, I was just about to ask. Yeah, I hope it's not a fully sunk cost. That'd be horrible.
Yeah, you know what? They pay you back the taxes on the flights, but they don't. Yeah, they don't refund tickets.
Right.
Generally.
Well, going back to MAGFest, I understand that there's I assume this is from like the 6 years ago era, but I understand there is a specific party moment, possibly related to meeting Tara C, that you
oh
like
my
to
gosh.
Tell people.
Yeah, this is 6 or 7 years ago, probably. 2016, so that's 8. Oh, it's insane. Yeah, so I was at a room party, as people tend to do at MAGFest, as they pick a room, get a bunch of people. There might be, may or may not be drinking involved, pizza, stuff like that. Gaming, like, I think people were playing Melee on like a CRT in the room. Yeah. And we were with, it was Tara C Music, Michelle Hafey, and we had a picture taken of us, and like, I don't know, it was just my face in the photo made me lose it, and I snorted. And because I snort laughed, that set everyone else off, which, of course, a chain reaction. I started laughing even harder, and like, I'm snorting really hard, and we couldn't stop laughing. And it was just like, yep, Tara and I were like buds for life after that moment, because I think once you share that just like unbridled laughter with someone, it's like it's a moment of connection that you can't let go of. So. Yeah, special moment.
A snort laugh brings people together.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, speaking of 8 years ago, actually, and I will get back to you uncontrollably laughing because you have brought that up before. But 8 years ago, 8 years ago, Julia seemed to be, at least when I look at your old Twitch, you weren't really doing VGM covers. You were basically doing like rock covers, like there's Zombie by Cranberries, and you did Toxicity by System of a Down, all that. When did you start focusing on VGM?
So I believe my YouTube channel was always more or less focused on VGM. So the first first time I posted would have been towards the end of 2015, if I'm remembering correctly. But yeah, the first few times I streamed, I kept it to like tunes that I knew. And because it's tunes that I knew, it meant it's like often 90s or early to mid kind of 2000s rock slash metal and that kind of stuff. Because that's, you know, during those formative years of music listening is what I listen to the most.
Yeah, well, Zombie by the Cranberries. The Cranberries generally just, I'm a huge fan, so
yeah,
you won
absolutely.
Me over with that one. But thanks. I also understand you're a huge Protest the Hero fan, and it's possible just there's no videos of it, but I didn't see any evidence of a Protest the Hero cover.
Yeah. Oh, they're like way above my skill level. It's actually funny, when I was about 14 and really badly wanted to learn to play the guitar. So I got myself a Squire Stratocaster with all black with a mirror pick guard. And I thought it was just the most like, I don't know, I was kind of a goth at that point. And I was like, this fits my vibe. This is like so edgy and cool. And I had a guitar teacher, maybe for about 5 lessons. And he's like, I want you to write a list of songs that you love and that you want to learn. And I was writing down all this like progressive metal, including Protest the Hero. This is back when their first album, Kazaya, was released. Yeah, and I was like, all these Protest the Hero songs. And he takes a look at it and he's like, well, these are really hard. I never got to that level on guitar specifically. Yeah.
As we said in the intro, you're a multi-instrumentalist. I want to say, you can correct me here, I want to say flute is your go-to, the one you prefer.
Yeah, if I were to, like, aside from singing,
right.
Flute. So flute, it was my very first instrument, period. So it was my first foray into learning how to read sheet music and learning how to be in an ensemble.
Flute was what I wanted. This is a total aside, but flute was what I wanted to do when I joined band in junior high, and I was one of those kids who like couldn't get a sound. It was just, you know, and they said, "No, why don't you try something else?"
Absolutely, yeah. So, like, I don't know how they set it for you, but we started in a grade 5. Yeah, 5 and 6 is when you got sequestered into like one of 3 music programs. You either were in band, you were in strings, or you were in general music. And the way that they decided who got to do what was that you did like a mini audition for band and for strings. They had me try all these woodwinds, they had me try all the brass, and they were like, oh, you can actually make a sound on the flute, so this is your instrument. And I was so proud of myself. I was like, yes. I also passed, so to speak. This is like year 10. I don't know if it counts as passing, but yeah, they also said you could be in the strings program as well. You could play violin, so pick flute or violin. And I just had that ego, you know, as a 10-year-old does. Like, I made the sound on the flute. So this is my, like, I own this instrument now. It's mine. I have to.
Do you still, and why, do you brush your teeth before playing a woodwind instrument?
Oh, man, I love that we went through the whole social media. Yes. What, how, and how, wait, sorry, you said why, but you asked another question too.
Oh, I just asked if you still do and why that is a thing. It seemed people responding
do.
Agree with you.
I still do. Yeah. Okay. Well, there's a couple of reasons. What, like, the first and foremost is it kind of, especially with the reeded instrument, like if I'm going to reach for my saxophone, it feels nasty to not brush my teeth and to like blow into a reed and then reuse that same reed. I also, and this is maybe going to be contentious, I like also rinse off my reed after I'm done, and then I wipe it off and like let it dry so it doesn't warp. But yes, with any woodwind, there actually is like, you know, like a popcorn lung, where if you like inhale too much bagged popcorn that's been microwaved, you can get your lungs can get destroyed. There's like saxophone lung too. Like if you have too much bacteria in your saxophone, you can develop a lung, a severe lung infection. And I'm not keen on that. So I brush my teeth.
So I've heard the term popcorn lung. I did not know that's what it was. And I also, I used to play clarinet, and I did not know that I could get an infection from that. And now I feel like that's something I should have known.
Yeah, okay, so it's not even a bacteria. I did a quick Google. Saxophone lung is a hypersensitivity pneumonia because you're breathing in fungus. Ooh. Yeah, so the conversation has gotten quite... It's kind of scary.
Well, all we're saying is people brush your teeth before you play a woodwind instrument.
You know, or don't and find out.
Or, well.
brush your teeth in general.
Yes.
In general, oral hygiene. Yes,
and floss.
Mm-hmm.
So we found out, we know what your favorite instrument is. My girlfriend... when we first met, she has a husky, and it used to sing. Apparently, huskies are very, like, musical animals. And it used to sing along when she would play piano. And it was very off-key, and it would, honestly, it was kind of annoying sometimes, but it was adorable. But you have a dog. Does your dog have a favorite instrument that you play?
So she reacts to the tenor sax, especially in the lower range. So if I like bleed out some low notes, she'll howl along with that. And I just got a tin whistle for Christmas, and she howled along to that one too. So yeah, she likes them. She likes woodwinds.
I mean, I'm a terrible musician, but I briefly tried tin whistle. I was in a Celtic band long ago, and I find that very difficult, only in the sense that, for me anyway, I'm sure if you're better, you don't need to do this, but I had to play so softly, or else it was just that shrill kind of sound.
Yeah, I think that overblowing on an instrument like tin whistle, on flute too, it's really easy to overblow and get that. It jumps up to the next harmonic, I guess, or it gets really shrill really fast.
What is the best language to sing in? You speak English and French. You know some Italian, mm-hmm. Russian, and German. And I'm pretty sure I've seen you sing in Japanese and Latin.
Yes. And Swedish, too. Just of the ones that are online. The best language to sing in?
Yeah. What sounds the best?
So, if you're trained classically, like I am... The general consensus is that Italian is one of the, if not the best. And the reason for that is the vowels that Italians speak with are incredibly pure and clear. So English, we jarble all our words, and we especially jumble and garble all our vowels. So when you go to try to take an English speaker and sing, it's actually quite difficult and different. You have to rework your diction and exaggerate a lot. But when you speak Italian and when you sing in Italian, Italian already has this big sort of song-like quality to it. So there isn't as much of a big shift. So Italian's super nice for singing. French is nice in a different way. French is nice because... there aren't any stressed syllables. You don't have syllables within words that are stressed. So you can sing one long continuous line of music and have it be super connected and super smooth. Japanese is nice. Again, the vowels are really clear, so.
Cool, yeah, there's that scene in, I don't know if you remember or I've seen, but in Saving Private Ryan, where they're listening to the radio and it's in France. So they're hearing a French woman sing, and the one interpreter is explaining to the others in the platoon, you know, here's what she's saying. And I love that scene because I listen to, you know, a lot of different music. I love music from around the world. And I don't want, even though it's at my fingertips, I don't want to look it up online and get the translation. I just want to hear the sound of that language, and I speak very minimal French, so I'm trying to interpret it, and I find that so much more enjoyable than, oh, here's what it is.
Yeah, the meaning beyond the literal meaning.
Right. How do you sing in a song in a language that you don't know? Like, do you go through it phonetically? Do you have someone coaching you, like for Japanese, or how how does that work?
Yeah, so with Japanese in particular, I actually, when I first started singing in Japanese, I reached out to my friend Stephen Morris, and I said, "Hey, so he's he's bilingual. He's got a Japanese wife. Like he speaks very well." And I was like, "Can you please help me?" And we sat and had a call and like went through the song. So sometimes, yes, I'll sit with someone. When I sang in Swedish, I had another friend, Thomas. He helped me out, and he was so great. He laughed at me because I had sung in Finnish before. I had sung some Sibelius in Finnish, and he was like, "Yeah, you sound like a Finnish speaker when you speak in Swedish." So that's been really helpful to be able to lean on friends who do speak the language. When I was studying diction, in school, you take courses that are focused solely on the pronunciation of the major four operatic languages. So that's English, French, Italian, and German. And then sometimes Russian is kind of added into there because Russian is, you know, there's a lot of big Russian composers, a lot of big Russian opera. It's mainly those first four that I mentioned. And you get books and you study diction, but it's diction for singers, which is different. Very slightly, and sometimes not very slightly, sometimes like very, very much different than the spoken. I think probably English is the most different sung versus spoken. But yes, so like a phonetic translation based on knowing the rules of diction that, you know, like you study and you get tested on it. And then as well, you do two types of translations generally. You do one that's a word-for-word literal translation, and then you do another one that looks more like when you watch a movie with subtitles, and it's more of like a localization type of translation, like a translation that makes sense. And maybe there's a little bit more artistry and kind of a poetic interpretation there. So you know moment by moment how to say the words, you know moment by moment what exactly the word is that you're saying, and then you know the overarching narrative of what emotionally am I trying to convey.
There's a lot to it.
Well, when you're singing like an entire 3-hour opera in German, and German is an interesting language along with Russian and along with Latin actually too, in that they have cases. And a lot of like English, French, Italian, Spanish, they don't have cases. So word order in those languages is very important.
Right.
Like
yes.
In English, there's only so many ways you can construct a sentence. And the word order determines the part of speech, right? Like it determines the function of each word in the sentence. Whereas with a language that has cases, you add little endings onto the end of nouns and pronouns and things like that. You add those endings, and the endings, depending on what you put there, it tells you the function of the word in the sentence. So that means you have the freedom to organize those sentences and put word order like almost liberally, depending on how many cases there are in the language, like German, Russian. Russian has like 6 cases. I think German has 4. I don't know if that's true. Russian has 6 though. And like, that's how you get things where you're doing the literal translation of something and you're like, this in English is just like a garbled mess. Like the sentence makes no sense, because you'll have like the subject of the sentence, which normally will come first in English, or like near the beginning, you have it like the last word of an entire stanza. and you're like, what are we even talking about? I don't know. I don't know until we get to the end.
Right. That I took, I've long since forgotten everything, but I took Beginner's German like literally 20 years ago. And yeah, that was always, I thought, well, wait a minute. So I don't actually know what's being said until the end of a sentence.
Yeah. Exactly. Who's doing the action? I don't know yet.
What video game has the best opera scene? I know you've done Oh, One True Love, and it's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And I know that's a parody of sorts of the FF6 opera. That's in Undertale for people.
As yeah.
Well. My money would be on the FF6 opera, pardon me. But across the video game spectrum, what's your favorite opera scene?
Oh, gosh. So, yeah, FF6, I'm leaning towards that only because it's probably the most notable. And, like, there's some others. There was actually one in Octopath Traveler 2, which surprised me. There was, like, an opera singer as a character. And the reason I hesitate to say that in particular is, like, Japan doesn't have as strong of an opera tradition, or like a bel canto, like specifically the opera style of singing. They don't have as much of a tradition as they might even in Korea, even as they might in like mainland China, where like that stuff is really developing. So I noticed that a lot of the time in Japanese games, when they try to have an opera singer and it happens to be a Japanese singer who's a very good singer, but it sounds like it's like one level removed from authenticity. It sounds like this is somebody trying to sound like an opera singer, and then often doing so with like technique that we might not necessarily employ in the same way. So like, I'm trying to think if there are any games that like super nailed it as like a distinctive opera scene. And I wonder if you can think of any others, Mark, that I might either not know or just not be thinking of right now.
Well, this might upset you.
Go for it.
Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Oh, that does not upset. Oh, yeah. No, that's fantastic. Yeah, I love the humor because, yeah, like opera already. Okay, honestly, like it's so melodramatic. And so if you can inject humor, actually, what Mario versus Rabbids, too, that's fantastic. Yeah, I love it. I love it when there's like a good melodramatic type tenor. It's perfect.
I actually I want to do a bit of word association with you, if that's all right.
Okay.
Okay. Yasunori Mitsuda.
So what am I meant? Am I meant to say
you were
what
just
comes
whatever
to
comes
mind.
To mind, whatever you think of you interpret
I,
it how
I literally
you will.
I literally thought Chrono Trigger.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you know, feel free to expand whatever you want to say about the words.
Yeah,
I say.
Melody. Gorgeous melodies. Yeah, like heartbreaking. I will cry at Shala's theme. I will cry at Corridors of Time. Yeah.
Zagreus.
Oh, he's a hottie. That's a hot boy. He's a good looking man. Yeah.
Mercy.
Babe. She's a babe.
Pajama Pants.
Comfy as heck. Yeah.
How much we'll end that there. Thank you so much. How much of your life would you say is spent in pajama pants?
Oh, like honestly, 80-90%. Like if I don't have to go outside, I'm in PJs. Yeah, they're comfy and they're easy to wear.
Mm.
So no, the name though, the original, so yes, before I just went by my name, I was under the, I guess, pseudonym Pajama Pants Music. And that's more actually a play on, I won't spoil or kind of say what my actual first name is, but Julia is my middle name. So it's PJ are my initials. And so it's always been sort of a play on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Also, I love PJs. I just love them.
Yes, I did notice in those 8-year-old Twitch clips, I'm pretty sure you're wearing pajama pants in every one.
Yeah. No, you gotta be comfy when you're playing the piano in your living room.
Something you tweeted a couple years ago, quote, "I become pleasantly surprised when I hear non-musicians fawn over the music in a movie/game. I feel so distant from that. Now that I'm in it, I can't see it like I could." Can you explain that? What do you mean?
So, as I've studied more and more music, it's extremely hard to turn off the analytical part of my brain when I'm listening. So it's almost as if I don't know how to just have music be music in the same way that I could when I was young. And I think that part of that is like reflective of what it's like to just grow up. So, you know, like you have your favorite show and it's just your favorite show, and there's no analyzing the show, there's no intellectualizing there. It's just pure like childhood joy at your favorite thing. And like the more I get into a subject, the harder it is to return to like, this is just my favorite thing and there's nothing else to say about it. So when I see people, I see people who aren't musicians just like absolutely fawning and like complimenting and loving certain music from games or loving music that they're listening to in general and just being like unabashed in how they love it without that, oh yes, and I also noticed about the production that the snare was EQ'd in this particular way and like all this extra analytical stuff that my brain just kind of fills in the gaps. And I know that for some people, having that analysis can kind of bolster their appreciation of it. And at the same time, with the ability to analyze the positives also becomes the ability to see areas of improvement and the ability to kind of be critical. And like, sometimes I don't want to be always having a like critical part of my mind when it comes to like, I don't always want to be listening critically to music.
Right. So do you not love music the way you did? Like, is it impossible for you to?
No. So this is what I was thinking now, because this tweet was, I don't remember the headspace that I was in when I made that. But since then, it's actually now even more special when there is music that is, I have such an emotional connection to, that it turns off the analytical part of my brain. And I'm like, okay, this is what's special. And like this, we hold on to. I don't think that can ever go away, because I think that there's always going to be art that does that to me. And there's like, no one could say anything analytical about the thing that would change my mind about how I feel about it, because it's literally an experience I had listening to it. So that's kind of like how I determine what's resonating with me, is like, is my analysis mode on or off? If my if I'm too analytical, I think that actually comes as a function of just the music not really resonating with me. And maybe it's true that less music resonates with me as consistently as maybe it did when I was a kid and like, or when I was a teen and everything was new and everything was fascinating and everything was like shiny and piqued my interest. Maybe that's true, but there's never not going to be like super special, incredible music out there.
Right. Switching gears, what happened to Wowie Talk?
Oh, yeah, that was just, you know, it's one of those things where you're excited to do a thing, and when it involves more than one person, I think we had it set like, we're going to record this many episodes in a batch, and then we're going to have this many per week that will be released, and then slowly people, you know, we were all different ages. Myself, Sab Irene, Carlos Eni, Insane in the Rain Music, same person. Terra C Music, Ro Panuganti. We're all, am I missing anyone? But in different ages, different stages of our lives, you know, like some people were returning to school, some people were just starting school and then finishing, some were finishing school, some were moving, you know, to Korea, some were moving from East Coast to West Coast to East Coast. So much stuff happens, and it just became hard to coordinate it being regular, and then we stopped recording it, but we still hung out regularly for some time, like as a group, even though we weren't recording the conversations.
Yeah, well, you're all still like total staples of the VGM scene.
Yeah, it was definitely a fun time. Like I look back on that super, like super fondly when we were, especially when we met up at MAGFest in 2017, and it's like, you know, so rare for us all to be in the same place. It was really special.
And now I'm finally getting back to the incessant laughter thing that came up at the beginning there. Mm-hmm. So on one episode of Wowie Talk, A Balancing Act, you described your creative process as like sort of being manic, like you hyper focus and then you get kind of zany and you're like laughing and you can't stop kind of thing. And then after you create the thing, you enter a depressive state. Do you still operate that way? And then like, is the trick like, do you just have to always be creating or else you enter a depressive state?
Yeah, like always avoid the depressive. So, you know, like you're onto something there, Mark, because I'm starting to understand myself a little bit better, that this there was in the past like a constant need to feel productive and a constant need to feel like I'm creating or like doing something that gives me worth and that demonstrates to the world like, hey, look, I've got worth. And so then like obviously when, you know, if your value as a human being is hinged on whether or not you're creating, yeah, like all I have to do is create and then I'm on top of the world. And then when that process is over, oops, I have no value anymore. We enter that depressive state. So I could absolutely have taken that in the direction of let me just work myself to the bone and never have any dip. I'll just move on to the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. That being said, though, like there comes a time where that's unsustainable. You burn out. And that happened to me probably multiple times over and over again and kind of forced to reevaluate my values and my priorities. Just realizing like, actually, I'm going to purposefully put myself in an uncomfortable position where I'm not always creating and then see what my mind does and see all the presuppositions and like internal biases or kind of hard coded, maybe I would call it even malware that I had internally that made me think that this was the only way that I could exist and have any sort of worth. So I sort of forced myself into not doing that. And it's, you know, I'm not fully there because there's certainly plenty of things that make me question self-worth and stuff. But it's certainly like I cannot imagine ever being back in that sort of pattern again. That sounds like a nightmare.
Yes. I definitely, you know, can relate, I guess, in that, for example, this is the first podcast I've done in about 3 weeks because of holidays and whatnot. And I'm trying to tell myself, like, you don't have to do it every week. Like,
yeah.
Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it's a common thing.
Right. Exactly.
People. Yeah. It's like set this expectation. I mean, like who set the expectation? Like literally no one. Like it's an invention and we hold on to it. And then, yeah, questioning like, okay, what's up with that? Like what's up with holding on to this expectation that I've created for myself that if I do X, maybe then I'll get to feel good about myself. And yeah, and then eventually the feeling good about yourself, it never really comes. It's just I'm, you know, postponing ever feeling bad about myself. And I don't, you know, I don't want to live a life where like it's just all I'm doing is avoiding feeling bad about myself by doing work.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I could avoid feeling bad, I'm all right with that.
I mean, like, yeah, if we could, but I don't know that like being human means
no,
we can.
Of course, I'm teasing.
Yeah, it sucks. Well, that's like, I mean, this, we're getting into like Eastern philosophy now, but that's just like, yes, to live is to suffer. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you, Buddha.
Did you
thanks
know
for that message?
Did you know that your cover of Dusk Falls from Fire Emblem Fates? So it's used on, from what I can find, it's used on 10 different TikTok videos, but eight of them are related to Fire Emblem. Two of them are from the same user, and they're soccer videos of Erling Haaland, who plays for Man City.
Okay.
That's, yeah, I don't know. It's just apparently this person really thinks that your Dusk Falls cover fits one of the greatest players in the world.
I love it. Yeah. See, I haven't looked at, like, I'm so not a TikTok user. I have to rely on like my friends who are, and they tell me about it, or like, or tell me about what's going on TikTok and all the like different subsets of the internet and like niches that come up. But yeah, I have a friend who was looking up a cover I did of like a Cinderella song. And he wanted to see where it was used. And he's like, there's cat videos. I'm like, yeah, my music's used for cat videos.
As someone who has a cat, that is now my next goal. I will make a cat video and put your Cinderella song to it.
Yes!
So VGM Together, you've been on a couple of panels for that. One of them...
Yeah.
One of them was about copyright and music and cover licenses and making sure everyone's got their ducks in a row there. And one of them was on arranging for voice, prepping your voice and then writing for voice and that kind of thing. And one thing that came up during that panel was makeshift recording booths. And I'm curious, what's the most bizarre circumstances that you have ever had to record under?
Yeah, I'm sure that other people have way more wild stories than I do because mine are pretty tame. But when I was first starting out, I had a Blue Yeti microphone, which is like, it's kind of a, maybe a bit of a meme at this point. It's like baby YouTuber's first microphone. And it's like on a stand. And
I'm using one right now.
Brilliant. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah. You know what? Like good enough for the job. But what I found with it is that it picked up so much noise from everywhere else and so many reflections from my living room that if I just recorded straight from my living room at the time, it was just like it sounded like so much echo. I didn't love it. And so I started recording in the linen closet, but like because the linen closet has shelves, I would set up my laptop at the back of it, of one of the shelves, put the microphone in front, and then just shove clothes like all around it to make like a little booth. And then the door couldn't close with me in it because it's not meant for people. So I just like hung, I grabbed the duvet from the bed and like hung it behind me. So that was how I made my booth at the time. And it kind of worked. It worked.
I love that.
I could sing. I could record. I could record. You know, it worked in that capacity. It was really hot and actually quite frustrating to set up. And so in that capacity, it didn't work super well. But yeah.
Cool. Yeah, as far as the Blue Yeti, something I am quite self-conscious about, but evidently haven't fixed yet. I'm very much a hand talker, and every time I go to edit an episode, I hear like I'm hitting the desk and whatnot.
Yes,
it's going to be on this one too, and I'm going to be so mad. But
you're going to hear it. Yeah, it will. Okay, so I stopped using the Blue Yeti to record. Covers and all that stuff, and professionally for video games or whatever. I stopped using it for that, but I was still using it like to talk to friends on Discord and stuff like that. And especially when I'd play Overwatch, I would use it, but I was completely unaware until a friend finally called me out on it, that like my super loud mechanical keyboard would just come through like louder than my own speaking voice. And then everyone in the Discord call, when I was in a lobby with them playing Overwatch, would hear my like frantic WASD clicks. He's like, it's so loud. And so, yeah, I didn't like set up. Yeah. So now I've got an SM7B on an arm. You know, that's another kind of like podcasting meme. Like all the podcasters have this microphone, but it's been nice to not pick up much extraneous noise.
That reminds me, years ago, I lived in a smaller town in Manitoba with my girlfriend, and Rocket League had like just come out, and my friends and I were obsessed with it. And we were playing on PlayStation, I had the headset on, whatever. And I guess, like, I don't think I'm generally like this, but both my girlfriend and the people that I was online with, like, my girlfriend's like on the couch beside me, and they would tell me, they'd be like, who's breathing so loud? And I guess when I play Rocket League, I'm like,
Rocket League is intense.
Apparently.
It is. I'm so bad. I've forever been bad at Rocket League. It's so hard.
Me too. I actually use it now. When I'm on the exercise bike, I just play on my Switch, and I'm like, I'm going to lose, but at least I'm getting
exercise. That's actually brilliant. Oh my gosh. Yes, okay. Do you have one of those like collapsible exercise bikes? Like, is it, how big is it?
I don't know, regular size.
Okay. Yeah, because there's like smaller ones. Like, I've been looking into getting like a smaller one, and like, yeah, I just have dreams of like playing a round of Slay the Spire or something, or like Hearthstone, like some kind of deck builder or roguelite. Nothing that requires too much action, but like being on the, or like watching anime.
Those are, Hearthstone and Slay the Spire are both games that I love. Personally, awesome. I'll give this advice to anyone listening. Personally, I don't know if you're the same, but as far as like working out, Rocket League is such a great, like, I know vaguely a round is going to take like 7 to 10 minutes. So I'm just like, okay, I'm on the bike for half an hour or more. I'll play 4 games.
Oh,
and
cool.
It just sort of, and I can kind of pay attention enough that I don't really know that I'm biking, but yeah.
So something with like, yeah, timed rounds.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah, I used to, for a time over the summer, it was like I'd do a podcast episode, and it's like, as long as I'm like lifting the weights for the length of the podcast episode.
Well, speaking of length of podcast episodes, we do need to wind down actually, but
okay.
I will
Brilliant.
Say, people can check you out, youtube.com/JuliaHenderson, juliahenderson.bandcamp.com. They can hear you, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe you are actually performing video game Chargeblade Hero and Legacy of the Moonspell DLC for Vampire Survivors. Is there more? I'm sure there is more. What am I missing here?
Well, so the, that Chargeblade Hero is unfortunately probably never going to be a full game. It was one of those canceled in production scenarios, which happens quite a bit in video game land. Vampire Survivors. Guys, play that game. Like, forget that I sing in it, but like, play the game because it's so freaking fun. Actually, that's a really fun one to play on an exercise bike because you can totally, all you have to do is move the analog stick.
And it's exactly half an hour.
Yes! There we go. We've cracked it. That's the perfect game for it. No, I don't think you've missed anything major there. Most of the actual listening you can do for me is YouTube, Spotify. I've appeared on, you know, tons of other people's channels, doing collaborations with them. The other work that I do for video games is more behind the scenes, sort of dialogue editing and maybe some voice acting soon. Who knows? Maybe Ooh. We look out for that. Yeah, games are cool, guys.
Julie Henderson, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Mark.